We're beginning the book of Mishle, and it was voted that this time we'll learn it with a little bit of depth and a little bit of covering ground. So we'll try to keep that balance here. Chazal tell us there was once a well that was very deep, and no one could get any water out of the well. Everyone had a short string, and their string wouldn't reach the bottom of the well. Along came a smart person and started tying string to string to string to string, until finally all the strings together could easily get the bucket down to the bottom of the well, fetch the water, and everyone had a drink. Chazal tell us that's a mashal for Shlomo HaMelech and the book of Mishlei, the book of Proverbs. Chazal say there are concepts that are difficult to attain about the depth of Jewish philosophy. And Shlomo HaMelech came along, and he compared things one to another to another to another, and with those comparisons he was able to elucidate concepts that were otherwise beyond people's comprehension. Now, we don't have, to the best of my knowledge, any exact explanation as to what are these proverbs, meaning we have areas where Chazal interpret the Proverbs for us. But to start saying, well, this proverb sets you up for the next one, and the next one for the next one, and that one for the one following, so that finally you'll get this concept, which would seem to go in line with that proverb, with that story, I don't know of any such tradition. And the feeling I get from the Rishonim, specifically Maimonides, is that we don't have such a tradition. Which leads us to a separate conversation which we can't have right now. But in general, when we speak about Jewish philosophy, we have to know that Jewish philosophy has its basics, its roots in the written Torah, but its branches and its true depth lies in the oral Torah. If you just open a book of Bereishis, so you understand that God created the world. Okay? But without a tradition as to how to understand Bereishis, you're left with many questions. Basic concepts of Jewish philosophy you could find in the written work. The depths of Jewish philosophy are hidden. And they're hard to come by. And our sages pass them in tradition in the forms of Proverbs, in the forms of Mishalim, Agadot, Sipurim, the stories that you find throughout the Talmud and the Medrash, those stories have encased within them the deep secrets of Jewish philosophy. The deep secrets of really understanding how does God run the world. The book of Mishlei seems to have multiple purposes. The book of Mishlei at the very beginning tells us that using this book, we're supposed to attain tools. Meaning the book itself has wisdom, but the book itself is also supposed to hone our tools. Whenever you learn, and this is in general, you have to remember this as you're studying, there are times where you're learning as developing tools, you're learning the language Hebrew. You're not learning Torah when you're learning Hebrew, but if you're learning Dikduk and you're learning the language well, then you're going to have a tool which you could use for learning Torah. So sometimes in our learning, we are developing tools. Sometimes in our learning, we are gathering information. We are gathering knowledge. And sometimes we are doing both. They sometimes go hand in hand. The book of Mishlei is a book that does both. On the one hand, there's a lot of information here. On the other hand, it is supposed to develop within us the capacity to perform the Torah in a better way. So the book of Mishlei has practical messages that are simple. And the book of Mishlei also has lessons as to how to learn Torah in general. Very often we read the Torah and we take it at face value. Most people know their Torah at the same level they learned it when they were last paying attention in class, which might have been third grade. So their story of Adam and Eve is still the story they heard in third grade. Never evolved beyond that. They never learned their Rishonim, the huge discussions as to what was the forbidden fruit. Was it wheat, grape, citron, fig, different opinions, and the ramifications of those opinions. So, Mishle is going to help us develop tools for our learning, and Mishle is also going to give us information. Being that Mishle is Proverbs, so that's up for interpretation. We're going to try to stick to the basic interpretations that we find in the Rishonim, the earlier commentaries. The book of Mishle gives us guidance how to analyze, how to be astute, not to fall prey to our desires, not to fall prey to external temptation. The book of Mishle, if we're going to summarize it in a nutshell, is about focusing on the long term at the expense of the short term. All of Judaism can be summarized as that. Long term benefit and pleasure takes investment. Short term is what we naturally desire. Rav Sadia Gaon writes in his introduction to Mishle that the whole book of Mishle can be summarized in that. That a person is always faced with a conflict. Right here and now, he wants a certain desire fulfilled. And if he does it, he'll have short-term pleasure, which is much less than the pleasure he can have if he only waits and does things in a proper and balanced way. And then he'll have much greater long-term pleasure, but that'll take time, and that takes self-discipline. And Mishle is about training us to have that self-discipline. So again, Mishle is tools. Mishle is also knowledge. Throughout the book of Mishle, we're going to see references, and these appear more within the first 13 chapters, about this woman that's a seductive woman. And Chazal have on tradition that the seductive woman is an allusion to the foreign philosophies, the other religions that are always trying to seduce us, the missionaries. They're always trying to draw us away. In the Song of Songs, we also speak about them. They call us, Shuvi Shuvi Ashulamit. Come back to us, you whole one. And she says back, Matechazuba Shulamit Kim Cholata Machanaim. What do you guys have to offer me? Let me tell you what I've gotten, and how could you compete? So in the book of Mishle, we're going to see a lot of that. The book of Mishle gives us advice as to how to be good parents, how to be good spouses, how to have appreciation for the good that we have in life, how to be fair people, how to be good partners, how to avoid shame, how to foresee what's yet to come. The book of Mishle gives us all of that. Much of it is going to be in the latter chapters, and so we'll just have to work our way to get there. The earlier chapters are less of that nature. They're more about the tools. And some of the proverbs in Mishle are long-winded. You have to go through a whole long story to get to the punchline. And the whole long story is going to tell you one thought. And some of the proverbs, you have to look at every word, and each word has a different message. Again, the longer stories are in the beginning. And the one-liners, which are brilliant, are in the later chapters. So that's why usually when we learn Mishle, we begin with the later chapters, because they're captivating. Each verse is a pearl of wisdom. And the earlier chapters, you have to have more patience for. But you guys are a patient lot, and so we'll begin with the beginning. The book of Mishle appears in Kisuvim, in writings, as opposed to Nevi'im, prophets. Some commentaries say that all the works of Kisuvim were written with Ruach HaKodesh, which we discussed earlier tonight, as opposed to Nevuah, prophecy. Nevuah is where a person has a vision and God tells him these words, or this vision. Ruach HaKodesh is more a general sense a person is in. It's a level of prophecy, but it is a level where the words that are given over are not as exacting. It's not that God gives him this vision or these words, but rather, these words is a little bit inaccurate. It's not that he sees a specific vision of prophecy, but rather, in general, he is on a level of Ruach HaKodesh, which affects what he writes. And Shlomo HaMelech was an unusually wise man, we know wisest of men. He gave us this great work of Mishle. There's a lot more to say, but let's get started. Let's get a taste for what we're doing. We're holding in Mishle, the very beginning. The Christians took the works of Tanakh and divided them into chapters. In Tehillim, we have a tradition, the division of chapters. But in Mishle, we don't have such a division. Just like Ezra and Nehemiah in Jewish texts is one book. The Christians divided it to Ezra and Nehemiah. Divrayam is one book. The Christians divided it to Divrayam in A, Chronicles B. Samuel is one book. The Christians divided it to Samuel A, Samuel B. Kings is one book. The Christians divided it. And it makes you wonder how we adopted it into our works. But that's why we have to be a little hesitant when we say chapter 1. These chapters are a Christian monk, you know, he divided these chapters. Okay, so let's begin. Mishlei. Are we ready? You guys have it? Mishlei Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. The Mishalim, which we might translate as the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king over Israel. You'll notice the mem is a big mem. The Midrash says that King Solomon fasted for 40 days so that he would attain the wisdom of the Torah like Moshe, who was up in heaven 40 days without food before he received the Torah. So Mishlei is going to be words of wisdom of Solomon, who fasted for 40 days to attain this. And we have to be prepared. He's beginning the work with the word Mashal. Be prepared. Things are not to be taken for what they seem. He's going to talk, and there is the simple understanding, and there is the deeper understanding, what's behind what he's saying. Ladat chokhma u'musar le'avin imrei vina. He said these proverbs to make known wisdom, chokhma, and musar. What is musar? So we're going to run into this word a lot in the book of Mishlei. Musar, that stems from le'aser, le'yaser, to subdue a person's more animalistic tendencies, or to train a person to work intelligently. Musar in modern Hebrew is about rebuke. It's about chastising. It's about making yourself a better person. And in Tanakh, it's unclear whether the word musar has the same connotations and the same meaning. Either it helps us stay on a logical path in life. There might be a difference between musar in this pasuk and the word musar haskel in the next pasuk. That depends on the commentaries. So at any rate, it's some way of training ourselves to stand up to the temptations of life and do what's right. Lehavin imrei vina. He said these proverbs to help us have understandings in the words of Torah. And here you see that Shlomo is telling us these proverbs are not only going to give you information, but they are going to hone your tools for learning other Torah. Lakachat musar haskel tzedek umishpat umeisharim. These proverbs will help you accept musar haskel, logical direction. Remember, musar, we said, is direction, helping us overcome our animalistic tendency. Musar haskel is that type of direction that stems from intellect, from logic. Tzedek, it will help us attain the understanding to do tzedakah, to do charity from our money. Mishpat, to be just people. Umeisharim, and to be fair people, people who can come to an agreement, who can compromise. That's meisharim, the capacity to do compromise. So tzedek is charity. You're the only one given. Mishpat is justice. Meisharim is the middle ground. It's a compromise. So these mishalim are supposed to train us to be able to use these, to apply, to do these things. Latet liftayim omaha, to give cunning to those who are gullible. Peti is one who is gullible, easily deceived. These mishalim are supposed to train us to have more cunning. Remember, the Torah is supposed to teach us to be productive individuals. Part of being productive is that you cannot be gullible. You shouldn't be taken. You should be kind, but not stupid, not foolish. Lena'al dat umzima. And these proverbs will give the lad who has not yet learned, it will give him das, understanding, and mizima, the capacity to plan, the capacity to plot a course in life. Part of the reason that people sometimes wake up and have midlife crisis where they say, what have I done with my life? Is because they never stop to plan. They don't have this mizima. What's my long-term plan? Where am I going to get to? So a person is supposed to have a plan, and one of the things that we're supposed to develop as a result of learning Proverbs is the capacity to make a plan. Yishma chacham v'yosef le'ekach. The wise one will hear my proverbs, says Solomon, and that will inspire him to learn even more. Vinavon tachbulot yikne, and one who has understanding will be able to take the information I'm giving him and use it even more. Use it beyond the wisdom that I'm giving him. Use it to develop it further, to develop it into tachbulot, is being able to discern things beyond what he said. Lavin mashal umlitza, Shlomo HaMelech says, and I want you to take note of two things. The simple understanding, that's the melitza, and the mashal, the meaning behind it. Meaning, Shlomo says, I'm not going to give you foolish proverbs here. If I give you a proverb, and the simple understanding of the proverb is there for the meaning behind the proverb, you have to know that the simple understanding also has wisdom. I'm not going to give you a proverb that's nonsensical. Even if you don't get the meaning behind the proverb, the simple understanding of the proverb is also worth something. So take note, says Shlomo, lehavin, to understand, mashal, the meaning behind the proverb, umlitza, the simple understanding of the proverb, divrei chachamim v'chidotam, the words of our sages and their allusions. Our sages don't always tell us exactly what they mean. You have many places in Talmud where Chazal spoke in cryptic form. And Shlomo HaMelech is saying, here I will develop your tools to be able to figure out what's behind that cryptic form. Those first six psukim were introductory. Now, Shlomo HaMelech is going to begin. So where does Shlomo begin? We'll see in a second. Yes, sir.
Isn't that this introductory extremely unusual, almost unprecedented, in Tanakh, have such a selection of the goals of the Sefer?
I agree. But so is the book. The book is also exceptional. You don't have another book like this. Koheles is totally different. Totally different. One day we will merit to learn Koheles together. We've yet to have a class in Koheles. We've been planning it, but it hasn't happened yet. When we learn Koheles, or learn it on your own, see, it's totally different. Koheles is a quest for truth. Koheles is a search philosophically. Where does the truth lie? What's the balance in life? Koheles is totally different. Koheles is questioning. It's very different than here. He's not questioning here. There's no question in the book of Mishlei. Koheles is also unique. There's no other book in Tanakh that's written like Koheles. Koheles, if our sages didn't tell us it was written in prophetic form, we'd think it was a philosopher's work. You know, why is he asking so many questions? Why is he experimenting? Why doesn't he tell us bottom line the truth? In Mishlei, he tells us the truth. Mishlei, there are no questions. It's about what's right.
So here, it's proper that he would give an introduction because there are set truths and set goals.
I think so.
Kohelet is more abstract.
This is the one book in Tanakh that focuses on how to be a better person. All the books of prophets and writings are about being a better person. But this is a book that's bottom line, you know, this is what you do. The other ones are messages that we're supposed to understand in general how to be better people. But you don't have another work in Tanakh that comes and says, work on this. Don't be fooled by that. It's only Mishnah. So Shlomo begins after this introduction, Yirat Adonai Reshit Da'at. The first thing you got to know is to be a God-fearing person. That's the first step. That has to precede the quest for knowledge. And this really deserves a whole class on its own. Our sages worked on this pasuk a long time because it seems like all your knowledge will lead up to Yirat Hashem. Remember, in the beginning of our learning tonight, we opened the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Chaf Amud Beis, the Talmud tells us you work your way up in your traits until finally you reach Yiras Shemayim, to be a God-fearing person. Remember, after you're clean of sin and you've been working and working, you're not far from prophecy, and then you attain Yiras Shemayim. And here Shlomo HaMelech tells us, you want to start learning, you got to be a God-fearing person. So Chazal tell us, yeah, they're both true. How's that for a Jewish answer? Chazal say, yeah, you start, you got to start with being at one level of God-fearing. And after you've learned a lot, it's supposed to lead you to a much higher level of being a God-fearing person. It is both the key to enter and the treasure you're trying to attain, both at the same time. Different levels. The Gemara was bothered by this. What do you mean? I'm starting off and I'm telling you, you wanna be smart, you gotta start with this. And then later Shlomo HaMelech is gonna say, and if you're really smart, you'll finally get to this. Which one is it? Is it the outer door to enter the game, or is it the goal? So Chazal say it's both. Yes?
Could this relate to the idea of the Ramchal that there's two different types of Yirat? Yirat HaOnesh and Yirat HaRomemut, Yirat HaChet, which are a very low level of fear and a much lower fear?
It could. I think there are commentaries that learn that way. Possibly the Malbim, but it doesn't have to mean that way. I don't know how much to expand. This will end up going off on a very big tangent. We'll discuss it in 20 seconds, and then you guys will be bothered, but at least we'll discuss it a little bit. Some of the greatest philosophers were very immoral. Some of the greatest philosophers are very immoral today. Knowledge without a conscience is not valued by us. And so Shlomo HaMelech says, you want knowledge? Begin with a conscience. You want to grow in knowledge? Begin by being a God-fearing person. You can find God-fearing people who are not very intelligent. Their level of being a God-fearing person is at their level of intelligence. But to have an intelligent person who is not a God-fearing person is a problem. It's a danger. Shlomo HaMelech says, you want to start? Start by being a God-fearing person. Then work your way up in knowledge. Yirat Hashem reshit dat. First step in knowledge is be a God-fearing person. Then you could advance. Okay. Chochma u'musar evilim bazu. You find that people who are wicked, they mock wisdom. They mock the attempts at telling them to be moral people and to go after the intelligent way of life. Now, in this pasuk, Shlomo HaMelech really told us a whole philosophy. People will often say, what do you need the Torah for? What do you need religion for? Philosophically, you could understand that society can only last if you abide by certain principles, if you go by certain laws. Open up any newspaper on any given day and look at all the leaders of this society that lives without religion, and people who live without being God-fearing people, and see where they've come. See how much these morals that they theoretically represent, how far they've led them. Now, you don't only have to look at people who are externally outside the religion. Sometimes you have fakers, people who are externally within the religion. But then you find out that their actions reveal that it was all a fake. Someone once came to Rabbi Feinstein and said, they caught this rabbi and that rabbi that they were embezzling, and what do you say about it? How do rabbis answer that? So Rabbi Feinstein said, there was once a case where people got, they went to a police precinct, and they took, they stole a bunch of police outfits. They took the police uniforms. They walked into stores and held up the stores and robbed them. Would you then come to the police and say, what do you say? How does this reflect on your policemen that these people dressed up as policemen robbed stores? You wouldn't say that. You'd say it's ridiculous. These people got dressed up as policemen. He said same thing with these guys. So they got dressed up. They grew a long beard. They put on a big kippah. So that reflects on us. You know, people get dressed up sometimes. Okay, so they got dressed up too. So I don't mean to say here that anyone that's dressed up a certain way, yeah, that's it. Their behavior is up to par. No, you know, that's all external. We're talking about what's going on inside. Yirat Hashem Reshit Dat, true fear of God. That's the beginning of true knowledge, if you want to gain true and good knowledge. And without it, then the knowledge is a thread. It's not necessarily something positive. The question is, what will you do with it?
Can we say that some people are okay, but they got lost on the way?
Anyone could get lost. I don't think we have to judge other people. We just have to learn from it. My goal isn't to be judgmental of other people.
Sometimes people do get lost. Right?
Anyone can get lost, 100%.
That makes them a fake, or
at that point they might become a fake, right? You know, one of the things I haven't yet had the time to write a letter, but there's a letter that's in the process for a few years to all the people in the gear process. And one of the things that letter should say is, when you're going to undergo Giyu, you're developing a relationship between you and God. And there are no intermediaries. That's one of the principles of faith. That means that Machon Meir, the rabbinate, any rabbi, me, we're not intermediaries. We might help facilitate this process. But at the end of the day, it's between you and God. When a guy tells me, you know, after I saw this and this and this, now I have a hard time keeping Shabbat. I say, wait a second. What did God do? You know, if something happens and a person is upset at his rabbi, at Machon Meir, at his synagogue, either he's right or he's wrong. I'm not coming to judge. But at the end of the day, what does that have to do with him and God? His gear is between him and God. And Yir'at Hashem is the fear of God. And we don't have to judge other people. It's between them and God. It's between us and God. I didn't want to sound like I was saying you open the newspaper and you see all those people who are irreligious and they're the ones doing everything that's wrong. No, you know, you could say you see all those people who are not really religious, and some of them dress this way and some of them dress that way. you can't gauge it based upon their dress. I got to limit what I say. I would tell you a story, but you guys said I should go off the balance. If you permit me, I will say a quick story, yeah? So, some of you have heard this story. The Medrash quotes that a man came into town. It's in one of the earliest Midrashim we have in the Psikta Rav Kahana, what's called Medrash Eretz Yisrael, that a man came into town, and it was Friday afternoon. He didn't know anyone in town. He had his wallet. It's Erev Shabbos. Shabbos is settling. And he goes into shul. So there's a person sitting in shul with his talis and tefillin, learning Torah. So the guy walks over to him and says, sir, you know, I'm new. I'm here in town just for Shabbos. Can I leave my wallet by you for Shabbos? And the guy says, sure. He finishes his learning. He takes the wallet. He goes home. He says he's putting it away for him. Comes Matzei Shabbos, Sunday morning, so the stranger in town knocks on the door, and he says, sir, would you please give me back my wallet? And the guy says, I don't know who you are. And he says, what do you mean? Friday, you, me, the shul, the wallet. Says, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, but I gave you my wallet. He says, not me. So he looks at him, and he says, I didn't trust you. I trusted your tefillin. You were sitting with tefillin learning Torah on Friday afternoon. I trusted your tefillin. The guy says, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, please, I'm telling you, I don't have a penny. I'm a stranger in town. I don't know anyone. You know, you can't do this to me. And the man is insistent, I don't know what you're talking about. So he sees he's not going to get anywhere. There were no witnesses. He's got nowhere to go. He's got no money. He goes back to shul and starts davening and crying. And he spends the next few hours weeping before his creator in shul. And he's weeping there. He doesn't know how he's going to have food that day. He's got nowhere to go and nothing to do. And Elio shows up. And Elio tells him, go over to his house. He's not there now. And tell his wife that he sent you to pick up the wallet. And the proof that he sent you is that he and she ate pork on Yom Kippur. So the guy goes, knocks on the door. The wife opens up. He says, your husband sent me. Said you should give me the wallet. And he said, proof that he sent me is that you and he had pork on Yom Kippur. She says, okay. Gets the wallet. Gives him the wallet. And he goes on his way. There's an end to the story, which we discussed in the special class. It's in Dov's Minute. We had a special class in Dov's Memory. We had a student here, Ruvain Dov Berez Rechi, who was a ger who drowned in a diving accident. And we, in his memory, we learned Dov's Minute. So we had a class at the 30, at the Shloshim of his passing. We had a special class about Gerim and Midrashim about Gerim. And there we discussed this Medrash. Because the Medrash says these two were Gerim. The husband comes home and asks his wife what happened. And she says, he came, he gave me the sign. No one else knew that you and I ate pork on Yom Kippur. So I figured you sent him. So the guy says, what do you mean I didn't send him? If a stranger in town figured it out, then everyone must know already. If everyone knows, then we'll give up the act. And at that moment, they stopped keeping everything. And the Gemara says they were descendants of Gerim. And when they realized that people were onto them, they stopped everything. The Gemara says, you see, the hardships of a ger last for future generations as well. It doesn't end with him. The guy could be dedicated, and then generations later, they feel that they're still like on the border. So we had a long class on this medrash. This is a very difficult medrash. It's a medrash that people don't like. That's why we had a class on it. We spent the whole class with a lot of sources discussing this. But at any rate, the point of the story is that the guy was sitting in shul Friday afternoon with his tefillin, learning Torah, looking exceptionally pious. If you'd ask anyone, who could you trust? They'd all say, come on, it doesn't get better than that. So we see it already in Chazal. Back to Mishlei. So Shlomo HaMelech told us, we got to all of this because Shlomo says, okay, I can't leave you guys all hanging here. I see all the sighs on everyone's looks. So you should know that there's another medrash. I won't go into the whole class which we had there. And there's another medrash that says that this concept, that the hardships of a ger last for generations, this concept is contingent on where the ger was holding when he became a ger. The medrash says there are three or four types of gerim. There's a ger that comes into Judaism and says, it's nice, it's comfortable, they have good girls, I can make a decent parnasa, maybe I'll get the benefits of aliyah, and I believe in it. And that's one type of ger. There's a ger that comes in and says, maybe it makes sense, probably makes sense, but there are a lot of benefits. And he comes into it. And then there are gerim like Ruth, like Rus, gerim who are called gerei tzedek, a ger who comes in and he says, whether it's easy, whether it's hard, whatever the price is going to have to be, this is the truth and this is the way I'm going to go. And the Medrash says that ger is going to end up like Rus, where her lineage were complete tzedekim, and from her came David HaMelech and the Mashiach. And that ger is not the ger we're talking about when we say gerim have hardships for 20 generations like that medrash. That was one of the, and that's not an answer that I give today. That's an answer that was written back then, but along the lines with the same medrash, you know, the same time. So, but it was a long class, guys. I'm summarizing an hour and a half class in 2 minutes. But at any rate, it's all online. It's all online, and the special classes probably. Okay, back to Mishlei. We've gone off on a big tangent. Okay, huh?
There's more?
Yeah. It's finished? On this, we're done. So, Yirat Hashem Hashidat. Bottom line, true fear of God is the first stage of knowledge. Chochma u'musar evilim bazu. Okay, we'll add one more point, just because there are so many people here in the gear process. You should just know that when we gave this class, so this room was packed. We had about three times the number of people here now, or four times that. A lot of people knew him, and a lot of people came in, and a lot of them were either Gerim or descendants of Gerim. And after class, they came to me and they said, you should know that the hardships you described are true. That the next generation and the third generation, we had people here who were third generation from Gerim, also have certain hardships. It doesn't end with the parents. It's not like you finished, you made your decision. A ger's children grow up with grandparents who are not Jewish, you know. and the next generation also very often has contact with that, and that gives them the hardship that in their mind, whether you like it or not, there's a certain norm of it's normal to be Jewish, but it's also normal not to be, because they've seen both. So the person who did gear on his own, he's made that decision, but he hopes that his kids won't have the hardship of having to make that decision. And what I got to hear feedback from the guys who were here is that for a long time later, generations later, people still felt like they had to make that decision all over again, because in their lives they had two norms, two things to choose from. And then they really had to make that decision all over again, which you understand is a dangerous position to be in. Theoretically, everyone has to make that decision, but practically, it's a little easier when you don't feel like it's a real decision. Okay, back to Mishlei. I didn't mean to take the winds out of anyone's sails or to sadden anyone. Okay. Shema beni musar avicha. Shlomo Melech throughout Mishlei is going to talk to son. Son is a term on the one end. On the simple level, it's Shlomo talking to his son specifically. On a deeper level, Shlomo is talking to all of us, and he's talking to us as though we were his kids. One can understand that as a leader of Israel, he views us all as his sons. We find that the sages in the Talmud would refer to people as son, bni. When Hillel is accosted by that man who's trying desperately to get on his nerves on Friday afternoon, he calls him Bni, my son. He speaks to him lovingly. So we can understand that that's also what Shlomo HaMelech is saying. Shema Bni Musar Avicha. Listen, my son, to that which your father is trying to guide you in the right path. Simple understanding, hear what your parents have to say. They do have your best interest, hopefully, at heart. If they're normal people, then what they say will very often be worth hearing. And I say this to guys whose parents are not religious and they're not the same way of life. At the end of the day, if they're normal people, they want what's best for you. And you should at least hear them out. Afterwards, you could decide, okay, I've chosen a different course, and what they've said doesn't apply to what the life I've chosen. But it's worth hearing. On the deeper level, the word avicha, your father, in Tanakh is a reference to God. It says in Parshas Ha'azinu, Halohu avicha kanecha, hu asecha v'yechoneneka. God is the one who is your father. He is the one that created you. We say there are three partners in the creation of every human being: his father, his mother, and God. And God is sometimes referred to as avicha. Well, if God is the father, then who's the mother? The mother is the people of Israel. Imecha throughout Tanakh is very often a reference to umatcha, your nation. So, on the deeper level, the pasuk is saying, Shema bini musar avicha, listen, my son, to your father, to God's directives, ve'al titosh Torah imecha, and don't leave the Torah, the customs of your nation. From this pasuk, we learn the halachos of minhag. Minhag, guys, we discussed that earlier tonight. Where do we get this from? Do we have to abide by a minhag? We get it from this. Al titosh Torah imecha. Do not leave the Torah of your nation. What's the difference between the Torah of my nation and the guidance of my God? Aren't they one and the same? Answer, no. The Torah of God is the Torah. And then there are the customs that have evolved that are referred to as Torat Imecha. And when you learn halachic works, and they discuss, is one permitted to transgress this custom or not, they will very often refer to this pasuk. Al titosh Torat Imecha. Do not leave the customs of your mother. In the pshat of the pasuk, there's an interesting point to note. The pasuk says, listen to your father when he's trying to guide you the right way, and do not leave the way of life that your mother has taught you. So I always say on this pasuk that this shows us the difference between a relationship we have with our father and our mother, and the difference that we will have with our children as fathers as opposed to what our wives do as mothers. The father goes head on with his kid. Son, you got to go to school. Dad, I don't want to go to school. Son, you got to go, you got to get an education. Dad, I'm tired, I'm not feeling well. Bam, notice the head on. The mother, without the son's noticing it, she gets him accustomed to a million different things. This is how you set the table, this is how you put on a tie, this is how you dress your shirt, this is how you go out to a meeting. There are a million things we do because our mother taught us. Don't drop the garbage in the street. A million things that we do, we don't even think about them, and they're ingrained in us. And Shlomo HaMelech uses two different terms. He says, listen to your father. And don't leave what your mother has taught you. Because what the mother has taught is in your blood, whether you like it or not. So just don't leave it. You have to make a conscious effort to remove what your mothers have taught you. Whereas the father, that's already, us men are very limited in our capacity to influence people. We only know how to do things head on. So he says, listen, you're not going to want to listen to the old man. Listen to him. We have to note that the word Shema has at least three meanings. The word Shema could mean to physically hear, a deaf person cannot hear. The word Shema could mean to understand, and the word Shema can mean to obey. When the Jewish people said, Na'aseh, we will do as God told us, V'nishma, what does the word V'nishma mean? Rashi says it means, and we will obey. They were saying the same thought twice, Na'aseh V'nishma, we will do and we will obey. Almost synonymous. We could say Na'aseh means we will perform V'nishma, and then we want to hear the reason behind it. We do want to understand, but we're not predicating our performance with understanding. That's what people usually say Na'aseh V'nishma means. But Rashi doesn't learn that way. So here, Shema b'ni musar avicha, what does the word Shema mean? So you could look in the Targum, and you get a clue. The Targum translates it as, hear what your father has to say. Okay? And don't leave the Torah of your mother of your nation. Ki hi livyatchen him l'rosheicha va'anakim l'gargerotecha. For the way of your parents are going to be an ornament on your head and some kind of necklace on your neck. Anakim is some kind of gold necklace around the neck. So sometimes we feel like if I do what my parents did, I'm going to be a nerd, right? Everyone's going to look at me like a geek. Shlomo HaMelech says, you should know, if you go in their footsteps, that's going to be your pride in the long run. They are going to be an ornament upon you, on your head and on your neck. And here again, if we were learning on a deeper level, then we would have to understand the difference between the head and the neck. The neck is where we speak. The neck is Torah Shebaal Peh. The head is where we see. The head is where we learn the Torah Shebichsav. But that deserves more understanding. And for today, we'll have to pause here.